It was a great day where we explored the role of symbols and stories in our spiritual life, because symbols are at the very core of any kind of religious or spiritual experience, because what we're talking about in the end of the day is something that is utterly ineffable, transcendent. And so in order to try and put words on it, we have to use images or symbols or stories. And that's right across the board in spiritual or religious life. Even the author of The Cloud of Unknowing, who said God was so ineffable and so transcendent that we couldn't even speak, had to use an image, the cloud of unknowing, in order to communicate the experience. So symbols are at the core of our religious experience. So if you think about even gestures, laying on of hands, genuflecting, bowing, whatever, giving the sign of the cross, blessing, raising our hands, any of those things, it's completely human. I mean, all humanity is soaked through with symbols. And then we have our religious symbols, which sometimes cross over and are both cultural and social. But they are all intrinsically part of the experience of our spiritual life. We even use the word journey, and that's a symbol. We talk about seeing the light. You begin to think about it, we're so steeped in our symbols that we don't even realise they are symbols.
I was just going to say that, in a sense, I mean, we have symbols everywhere, and yet it's very hard in a way to communicate them. And as you said, they're trying to describe something ineffable, and we're so used to them that we don't really even see them anymore. So I suppose, how can people tap back into them again, or tap into them in a way that would be meaningful in their lives?
Well, I think that is a key question. Because we are surrounded by symbols, we tend to take them for granted. And in fact, what I often do is an exercise where I ask people to think about the symbol stories we have around, for example, the resurrection. And people start to think, the empty tomb. And again, we put up the empty tomb, then we talk about the man sitting on the stone on top of the boulder, and then maybe Jesus appearing to the two people in Emmaus, Mary in the garden, the story about he appears, she recognises him, she doesn't recognise him. In Emmaus, the disciples recognise, they don't recognise. Then we go on to look at the people might remember, oh, he appeared through doors. Yes, he did. He told Mary not to touch him, but he told Thomas to touch his wounds. He was on the shores and he cooked breakfast, and yet he disappeared. And eventually he ascends into heaven. Now, I ask people to take a look at those stories, as if for the first time. Because what has happened is we take those stories and we've been so brought up with them, they've been so solidified, they become dogma, they become doctrine and dogma that people have fought wars over. Right, handed down century after century after century, and you come to the 21st century and a person looks and reads that and says, I don't believe any of that, that's stupid nonsense. So I ask them, what has happened in that process from that early community who wrote those stories to try and explain, using symbols, a powerful experience that they had, that Jesus Christ's mission was not over on the cross, but it actually was continuing, and that he was transformed, and that it was the same Jesus and yet different. And he cooked, and yet he disappeared. And it was bodily, and yet it wasn't. Because very often people believe in a Greek notion, which is the immortality of the soul. Now, Christians don't. They believe in the resurrection of the body. That's what they say in the creed. But what kind of a body? What are we talking about? Now, it's really difficult to speak about it if you don't use symbols and stories. And what I'm suggesting is that what people have lost touch with, myself included very often, is the engendering experience that gave rise to those stories and symbols. Those stories and symbols were written because a group of people and a whole community had an experience that crucifixion and death was not the end, that failure and what appeared to be abject failure was in actual fact the beginning of a whole new way of life that we are all called to be part of. And that's what we believe in. So when we're really down and when things are really tough for us and suffering is enormous, we don't just believe in the Christ crucified. We believe that there is a risen power that can help us in a new way. But it's getting back to that engendering experience. And sometimes to do that, we need to take time. We need to let the symbol speak. We need to sit back and read the story, not the rushed way we normally do. The Gospel of the Lord, thanks be to God. take time with it. Does a symbol, does one word speak out to you? What does it say? Symbols require time and attention. If you look at any good poem, people here recently voted Seamus Heaney's beautiful poem about his dead brother, Midterm Break, as the number one favourite poem. But you go back to that poem again and again. You don't just read it once and say, I've got it. And it also, the poem does not just operate on a cerebral level. Oh, this is a poem about son and the impact of loss. It actually takes you in to the experience. And that's what our good stories and good symbols can do if we give them time, if we are prepared to be present to them and let them speak back to us. Not if we rush through them and take them for granted. There's a whole bit of work to be done there.
It seems, though, that that is going to come up against maybe a culture that is a little bit more, well, if something can't be explained or it can be explained precisely, concisely and in a very factual way, it doesn't really have a value.
Yeah, and that's a whole category mistake that is made. And there are reasons for that. I think it was really sad that the institutional church decided to think that in the 15th and 16th century it could take science on at its own game and that they could show how scientific they were and how rigorous they could be. The whole discourse of religious experience and spirituality is a discourse of symbols and imagery. I mean, Jesus knew that. He used parables all the time, and that was the teaching. And Jesus wouldn't even explain his parable, which is really important. You don't explain a symbol. You let it speak to you and you speak to it, and it's a dialogue. Jesus said, if you understand these, blessed are you if you hear and understand, and even more blessed if you do the thing. But he didn't really want to go into all the explanations. And even the ones that have been given additional explanations, probably by the writers, the gospel writers, sometimes they're not even good. You can get better ones if you spend time with it, and deeper ones. But that is the thing. Symbols are a different mode of discourse. It's like saying, you know, water is H2O. Tell that to a poet. You know, that's not the way. You're using a different faculty in understanding and coming to terms with and trying to express the experience of spirituality. The problem, as I see it, is that lots of people have spiritual experiences, but nobody tells them that that's what it is. So T.S. Eliot used that line, we had the experience, we missed the meaning.
Do you think we're afraid maybe to point those things out or put a name on it, or we're not really that confident? Because you do hear people writing about, or mystics writing about mystical or spiritual experiences, but do you think, well, that couldn't really be happening to me?
Precisely. We make it the preserves of saints, and the saints are usually... And I was even reading a book about St. Teresa of Avila, because I know it's her 500 years, and it's a beautiful book. And she's a very down-to-earth woman, but she's a saint, and she was in a monastery. And I know she went out and around, but she's not married with four or five children. Like, I want a saint who is a married woman, three children, that made it and reared the three of them, and of course made mistakes, and of course was not the best person in the world, but lived like my mother. Like, I will call my mother a saint, because she, with whatever tools she was given and with all the limitations, made whatever the best she could out of it. But there'll never be St. Bridget of Laburnum Terrace, Bogside. But I will canonise her, and I want to canonise up and down the country women like that, and men, ordinary people. I understand we can hold up saints for extra paragons of what they've done, but it usually comes from the people who are making them saints, and that is male celibate men. And sometimes there'd be more women thrown in there as well. But it's usually associated with the, you know, that they're in a religious institution and more or less, I mean, sex, oh, we couldn't have that now in sanctity now. They actually decided not to have sex because they offered it up. Do you know, I mean, I really feel we need to get real about where God is located. And to me, God is in the heart of every single person. But it's uncovering that. That's a lifetime work. And our symbols and our gospels and our stories, which are beautiful, and our stories and beautiful. I read Hindu stories, I read Buddhist stories, I read Christian stories. All of those are trying to help us to break into that relationship and what's going on. And here's a really interesting one. I remember there's a real gospel story that gets people going. I think it was a great one Jesus told about the labourers in the vineyard. Now there's one that will get people talking. But the people who came at the last hour got the same money as the ones at the start. Now if you ever do that story, and I was there when the wonderful storyteller Megan McKenna did a 4-day workshop on storytelling, and she did that story with the group that were there. Well, the interest and the gut feelings that that brought out, because the thing is, symbols are also not just about the head, they're about the heart, they're about the core. And that's where we are engaged by God. It's not just a head thing, it's a head, a heart, a soul, a core issue. And that's where our symbols speak. And that's where they can bring us back. And that's why, you know, if you smell, if you ever, people talk about going into a classroom and maybe back to their old school, and it's the smell first that takes them back. You know, oh, they remember the smell of the milk or the wooden desk or the sharpener. And then it evokes all these memories. And they're the kind of things, and that beautiful music, you know, good stories, they're the things that put us in touch with something bigger than ourselves. And that bigger self and that thing bigger than us is that encounter with the divine within and outside and all around us. And our symbols are a great gift in doing that.